Makeshift Stories presents Somewhere, Sometime, an irregular series of short sci-fi and fantasy stories.
Through archaeological research, museums, archives, and historical texts, we assume that we have an idea of what has happened in the past. Oh sure, we don't pretend to know the small details, but we believe that we have the big events down pat, at least the ones that lead us to the present. But what if we have missed something so fundamentally huge that it would shake our very understanding of the world? In the second installment of a two-part story, set at some point in the future, a young person who has inadvertently stumbled upon an odd conspiracy finds out that humanity is not alone. We now invite you to sit back and relax as you listen to Makeshift Stories 55, The Awakening, Part 2. Somewhere in some time, we might find that everything we thought we knew about history was wrong. The alien hybrid human started the bus in motion again, then swung it around to head back the way Maya had come.
"Do you remember when your parents first brought me back to the cafe what you did?"
it said.
"You called me a useless street urchin when your parents were out of earshot. Remember how I reacted when you said that?"
He paused, peering ahead into the darkness as if he was waiting for Maya to answer. When she didn't, he continued.
"I said nothing because I didn't really have a choice. My parents had just died, and I was on the hook for their hospital bills. Your family bought my work bond, and I was going to have to take your place in their cafe so you could go to college. At the time, I felt so worthless that your comment really hurt. We really didn't like each other at first, did we?" That took time.
Maya tried to gather her thoughts. Tim, or more accurately, something that had his memories, was sitting beside her, taking her back to captivity. She was confused and frightened. Her Tim had disappeared in New Hudson. But what had happened to him after that, and was that going to be her fate too? She cringed at the thought.
"If you really are my Tim, then tell me how and why they did this to you. And are they going to do the same thing to me?"
Maya nervously demanded.
"They didn't do anything to me, Maya. No one wants to hurt you either. You have this dormant within you, or you don't."
Tim gestured to his face.
"Honestly, I didn't know until I started changing in New Hudson. Then some of the others spotted me and brought me here. Once I transitioned, I would have died if I'd stayed there. It's too cold and humid. I've been told my transformation wasn't supposed to happen. It wasn't time yet. That's still to come. But it's me, Maya. I'm the same person inside. The only thing that's changed is my biology. They sent me after you, figured that you would trust me, that I would have the best chance of bringing you back before you died out here. Maya, what you did was very reckless. If I hadn't have caught up to you, well, you wouldn't have made it out of the Badlands. It's not a place for humans anymore. It hasn't been for almost a century."
"Yeah, I suppose it's only good for lizard people like you,"
Maya spitefully muttered. Ignoring the comment, Tim reached down into a pack he had dropped on the floor, pulled out a water bottle, and handed it to Maya. She thirstily took it from him and gulped down its cool contents, then wiping her mouth, offered it back.
"Thanks, but no thanks. You need it more. You're probably dehydrated."
"Come on, it's so hot. How could you not be thirsty?"
Maya protested.
"I've changed. I'm perfectly adapted to this climate. It's my home now, Maya."
"This is too weird. I don't understand what's happened to you,"
Maya questioned, as fear and anger washed through her again.
"Like I said, you're born with it or not. It's genetic. I reacted to something in New Hudson that triggered my transition. I'm told it was a fluke, very rare. Sorry, Maya. I'd like to tell you everything, but I can't. I've told you all I'm allowed to until we get back to Uram. Then the Elder will fill you in. Believe me, you're not in any danger."
Maya gave Tim a blank stare.
"That's the city you were being taken to when you took off,"
Tim added.
"I was being held captive,"
Maya indignantly corrected.
"And if you're still really my friend, you'd help me get out of the Badlands."
Tim sighed.
"Maya, you were headed the wrong direction. So now there's not enough coal oil to make it out. Uram's the only place we can refuel. We don't have a choice. Anyway, now that I've transitioned, I can't survive outside the Badlands. So I can't take you back, even if we had the fuel."
By what looked to be mid-morning the next day, through the thick glass of the passenger cab, Tim had made her get in the air-conditioned cab just before dawn. Maya saw the irregular towers of what she now knew was a ram rise out of the desert as they drew near. Seemingly impervious to fatigue and thirst, Tim had driven the entire night without stopping. He had told Maya more about what had happened to him after his transition had been triggered, carefully avoiding saying anything that he wasn't allowed to, which meant that what he did say left so much out that it didn't make much sense. He claimed again that his so-called transformation had been accidentally touched off. Maya remembered Tim reacting strangely to a handheld, like it burnt his skin. She asked him if it was the radio frequency the small computer was using. He simply shrugged. But soon after that incident, he had slipped away and had left her alone with strangers in the midst of a bizarre situation that was becoming weirder by the moment. Tim had claimed not to have any choice once, he called it the awakening, had started. The changes apparently made him aware of others like himself and made him intuitively understand that to survive he had to go to a ram. He didn't seem to remember, or was consciously avoiding mentioning, Maya couldn't tell which, how his new friends had helped him effortlessly travel over 3,000 kilometers to the Western Badlands, something that had taken her weeks to do. Maya felt the bus begin to slow down, but this time, instead of stopping outside of the city, Tim drove straight toward its center. Unlike anything Maya had ever seen before, there was no gradual transition from rural to urban. Instead, a ram simply started, complete, intense, and crowded, like an irregular wall in the hot, arid wilderness, bulges marking recent expansions. An unbelievable variety of nearly organic buildings pressed in against the narrow street they had taken. Alien-like humans, similar to Tim, in all sizes and ages and manner of transport, crowded in around the bus, forcing Tim to slow to a crawl. A few warily watched from the curb as they pushed upstream against the heavy traffic, staring and pointing at Maya like she was some exotic animal caught on a hunting trip. They passed through what seemed to Maya to be a warren made up of hundreds of almost identical streets until they finally came to an empty square, in the middle of which were three small raised platforms with lenses over top each that appeared to intensify the sun. Maya guessed that she would soon find herself strapped to one. The buildings defining the square's perimeter were larger and more official looking, and this was the only place she had seen so far where there were no crowds. Tim pulled the bus into the shadow of one of the buildings, then hopped out of the driver's seat and made his way back to the enclosed passenger cab. He carefully opened the door and then called in to Maya.
"We're here. This is our destination. Let me help you out."
Tim stopped and held his head at an angle, as if he were trying to hear something, then added,
"I've been asked to take you straight to the council room."
"What, so they can transition me like you, or better yet, dissect me?"
Maya sarcastically commented, initially refusing to move, but realizing what a useless gesture that would be, brushed Tim's hand away, jumped out, and shouldered by him. She did her best not to let Tim see how the heat, even in the shadows, was affecting her. Tim sprinted to catch up, directing Maya toward a building closest to the bus. They entered through an open arch without any doors. The main hall they found themselves in didn't have a roof. Fortunately, the sun was not at the right angle to glare down into it, so it was a few degrees cooler than the square. The smooth adobe walls were covered with a script that Maya couldn't recognize, but got the feeling that these were the laws of the community. She concluded that she was being taken to be judged, and felt her legs weaken under her. Maya wasn't sure if it was the heat or her dread of what was about to come. Noticing her stumble, Tim offered a hand and tried to comfort her.
"Maya, there's nothing to fear, you'll see."
Maya stubbornly rejected Tim's hand, then started walking again. They wound through the twisting halls, eventually coming to a large, irregular-shaped door. Tim tilted his head again.
"They're ready,"
he announced, then pushed the heavy door open. Anticipating what must be coming, Maya reluctantly stepped through, Tim close behind, apparently not giving her any choice in the matter. They entered into a large, surprisingly comfortable, dimly lit chamber. All the windows had been covered, Maya guessed, to keep the room cool. Someone, who looked like a guard, tossed a heavy coat to Tim. Most of the room was empty, with the exception of a small group huddled around a large central table. A human man and a human woman in shirt sleeves were engaged in an intense conversation with four of what Maya now thought of as the Salamander people. Despite the fact that Maya still found the room a little too warm, the Salamanders were all wrapped in heavy hooded coats. Finally, a break in the conversation occurred. One of the human-lizard hybrids noticed them and beckoned them forward. The female human turned around, and to Maya's surprise and relief, she found herself looking into the face of her mother. Maya ran to her and gave her mother a desperate hug, then noticed her father, grinning like a Cheshire cat, reaching over to hug her as well. Maya started to talk. She had so many questions and fears that she couldn't hold them in, and immediately blurted out,
"Are you okay? Did they kidnap you too? What are they going to do with us?"
"We were all so worried about you, worried that Tim wouldn't find you. Thank God he did,"
her mother said in a calming voice.
"But it's a complex situation here, hard to explain. I think I better let our host tell you. They've already filled your father and I in."
Tim slipped into one of the empty chairs around the table and shot Maya a gleaming smile. She tried to scowl back, but her resolve about the new Tim was beginning to soften. One of the four bundled figures dropped her hood to her shoulders, shivering a bit as the air touched her skin. The woman, far older than any other Maya had yet seen in the city, lay a large handheld on the glassy tabletop, then consulted it.
"As I've told your parents, Maya, we intend no harm. We just want to live in peace and be left alone. But the announcement to the world of our existence, that needs to be carefully timed and managed. An accidental leak would result in violence and unnecessary grief."
"That doesn't make any sense to me. I don't know what you're talking about, and I'm tired of not being told everything."
Maya stared accusingly at Tim.
"What is going on, and what are you going to do with us?"
The woman tilted her head like Maya had seen Tim do several times.
"Oh, I understand. Tim tells me that you're having a hard time accepting him for what he is now. What questions can they answer for you first? Perhaps that will help ease your concerns."
"Who are you? Where are you from? And what do you want with us?"
Maya quickly replied.
"Those are big questions, Maya, but not all of them are simple to answer. The easiest is where we are from. We're from here."
"I don't understand,"
Maya spat back.
"You must have come here, to Earth I mean, from somewhere else. Otherwise we would have—"
The woman cut Maya off, then completed her thought.
"How could all of humanity not have noticed us, you mean? When we are discovered, and that is very rare indeed, it is always assumed that we are invaders from some other world, aliens, or in the past, demons and monsters. But we are as alien to this world as the grass and the birds, or you, Maya. We've always been here, living side by side with humanity, mixed in and hidden in plain sight. Think about your friend Tim. Several weeks ago, you accepted him as the same as you. But he wasn't. Even he thought he was no different. None of the unawakened do. Our greatest gift has always been the ability to, like a chameleon, change ourselves to blend in. But we are much better at it than simply changing the pattern of our skin. We can literally become indistinguishable from you."
The woman's face began to change, rearranging itself until Maya saw her own eyes and nose start to appear.
"Stop that, please. I believe you,"
Maya implored, feeling revolted.
"Good, then we can move on."
The woman relaxed her face, and Maya's features melted away.
"Our legends say that at one time we lived apart from humanity, avoiding all contact. The story goes that our distant ancestors watched humans expand throughout the world, altering the land to grow crops, eliminating species that competed for your food, and fought amongst yourselves for territory and resources. No other species on Earth was so aggressive, and that deeply disturbed our ancestors. They knew we couldn't compete. We would be wiped out, so they decided not to reveal ourselves to your kind. But as humans continued to expand, the only way to keep from being discovered was to disguise ourselves as you, to live among you, to become you. To do this, we had to forget who we were. We submerged our identities,
so deeply that most of us are unaware that we are not part of humanity. Like Tim, we collectively went to sleep. Unconsciously, we still recognized each other, met and married each other, so our race could continue. For thousands of generations, this has been our reality. Except for a few that stayed awake to watch over us and keep us connected.
I've seen how. You communicate psychically, don't you?
Maya interjected.
That is a method for those of us who have transitioned. But as I was saying, most of us have remained unconscious, sleepwalking through our lives. Except for the few who are our eyes and ears, waiting for the moment to announce our presence to humanity and reawaken our race. And by and large, we've stayed out of your ancestors' way, at least until humanity provided us with the idea. Let me explain. Our species, in its uncamouflaged form, can only exist in the warmest, driest areas of the world. So ultimately, our original territory was very small, limited to parts of the Sahara, the Victoria, the Arabian, the Kalahari deserts and Death Valley, maybe a few other tiny scattered places. Those were eventually overrun as well, even though they are at the upper limit of human survivability, but only the beginning of ours. Fortunately, our origins are from a much warmer and drier time in the past.
The woman intentionally stopped, letting her words sink in before continuing.
When humans began to industrialize, we saw our opportunity. You were so widespread, and your industrial technologies were perfect to heat up the world. All we had to do was encourage you and keep your collective memory short enough not to notice our interventions. It is the perfect storm. A hotter world will give us the space to wake up and allow the climate to determine the boundaries. There will be no wars, no conflict. Both cultures can exist. Us in the hot, dry places, and you in the cooler ones. The world will naturally divide. So for the first time in tens of thousands of years, we directed our sleepers to influence human affairs. Through them, we encouraged the cutting down of forests, the burning of oil and coal, or any other activity that would hasten the world to warm. Our numbers are not insignificant, and we are in every strata of human society, so it was not hard for us to sway opinion or direct development in our favor. Finally, to ensure our success, our unconscious population were directed to rewrite key points in history so even those among you who believed in our presence had no basis for their claims. And yes, we are aware of the human groups that suspect we exist, like the group that you and Tim came in contact with, Maya. They think that we may have interfered with human affairs in the last few centuries, but they don't understand any more than that. They don't understand why. Look, we're not a violent people. It's against our nature to intentionally harm others. So to defend against our detractors, we have simply ensured that no one takes them seriously. And now, with your species' unwitting help, we are close to completing the climate change we need for our awakening.
Not sure what to believe, Maya sat in stunned silence. Then curiosity forced her to ask,
"What do my parents and I have to do with this? Why are we here?"
Maya's mother looked at the woman, who nodded her consent.
"Maya, we accidentally interrupted one of their advocates who had come to check on Tim. I guess because of the interest he had unintentionally attracted through that gopher server he built.
We use systems like that to communicate with our human form advocates,"
the woman coldly stated.
"The system is so old that it was completely forgotten about by government, until Tim, that is. There was an accident,"
Maya's mother continued.
"And it triggered their advocate's transformation. We witnessed it. We'd seen too much. Their advocate forced us to leave a false trail to misdirect anyone who might try and find us, then brought us here."
The salamander woman picked up the story.
"And what better than to throw any suspicion north? But we are not yet ready for the awakening, and no one can know about it. Now, we must deal with you and your parents. We can't keep you here against your will until the awakening happens, nor can we trust that you will never say anything about it. So we have an interesting problem that leaves us little choice."
Maya remembered the three platforms in the square and shuddered. It had been a scorcher. Maya was sure that it must be a record, but the Global Net weather site insisted otherwise. The afternoon had been very slow, with few customers willing to brave the heat, so she had taken the opportunity to study for her exam. The heat had made her mind fuzzy, and she felt somehow disconnected, almost as if she was sleepwalking. The bells in the cafe door happily jingled as it opened, destroying the feeling, causing a momentary heat wave until it was shut again. Tim strode up to the counter. Maya was always struck by how the heat didn't appear to affect him.
Hi, Maya. Sorry I'm a bit late. I'll take over from you now. Oh, and before you say anything, yes, I'll remember to balance the till when I close out tonight. That's okay. Don't worry about being late, Tim. But it's so hot out there that I think I'm going to stay here and take over a table at the back and keep studying until my parents can pick me up.
Maya smiled, then looked more closely at Tim with an analytic eye. It was the same grinning, eager-to-help, longing, boyish look he had always given her. But there was something else in there today. Something deep, subtle, knowing. Something other.
Thanks for listening to Makeshift Stories 55, Somewhere, Sometime, The Awakening, Part 2. We hope that you enjoyed this month's story. As always, if you like what we're doing, please tell your friends about us. We'd love to hear from you, so send us an email to makeshiftstories@gmail.com or visit our website at makeshiftstories.com. The opening and closing theme is Pod Safe Music by David H. Makeshift Stories is released under a Creative Commons Attribution, No Derivative License, which means that you're free to share our stories. Just remember to credit us and don't change anything.